Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com. accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast coming to you from Montecito, California. And this week's podcast is kind of more of a timely update kind of thing. It's regarding a fairly recent legal settlement made by the National Associations of Realtors. So affects most real estate agents, and so it affects you. You know, the cost of real estate transactions affect everyone, regardless of whether you invest in real estate or not. Why? Because the cost of the transaction will ultimately be included in the price of real estate. The price of real estate ultimately affects all markets, right? I mean, the real estate market for sure, that affects pretty much everybody, whether you buy or rent your own home and all that, whether you're a real estate investor. You know, one of the biggest costs in a real estate transaction is the commission paid by the seller. And, you know, in fact, I will say that I got myself a real estate license before I bought my house in Santa Barbara, because I thought it would just, you know, save me a ton of money to get some of that commission and sort of a discount on my house, right? In the last several years, the way that the commission structure have worked is that, certainly at the residential level, is that the seller's broker collects these commissions and then shares them with the buyer's broker. So if you are able to represent yourself in that situation, then you're able to get part of that commission essentially from the seller, which is kind of a nice deal. And that's why I did it. However, that whole paradigm is about to change as part of a massive settlement between home sellers and the National Association of Realtors, otherwise known as the NAR. The issue at hand, well, sellers don't think they should be paying for brokers who are not working for them. And of course, that makes sense, right? Each one of those brokerages, the buyer and the seller brokerages, are supposed to have fiduciary responsibilities to their clients. And up to now, the sellers have basically been essentially, you know, paying for the buyers to have representation. And the courts have agreed with sellers who've sued the National Association of Realtors. And to avoid this ongoing massive litigation from across the country, the NAR has decided to change the way it does business. They're pretty interesting and significant. And it'll be interesting to see how this affects real estate in general, and it actually could potentially even change some prices. But certainly for real estate investors, whether you're dealing with, you know, 1-4 unit type real estate, this certainly affects you. If you own a home or if you're looking to buy, this certainly affects you. Stuff that you should know about, and that's why I wanted to get this out to you as soon as possible. This interview with Butch Lieber, who we'll have in just a moment, who's a past president of the Phoenix Realtors Realtors Board of Directors. And we will have that conversation right after these messages.
What do the Rothschilds, the Romneys, and the billionaire hedge fund managers know that you don't about growing and protecting wealth? As you might imagine, the wealthy have a few tricks up their sleeves. One strategy allows you to grow wealth tax-free at a compounding rate with no volatility. It protects your money from creditors and lawsuits, and it lets you invest the same money in two different places at the same time. How about that for amplifying wealth? To learn more, go to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, my guest on Wealth Formula Podcast is Butch Lieber. Butch is the past president of the Phoenix Realtors Board of Directors. Butch, thanks for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me here.
Before we begin this program, I know you want to put in a little disclaimer. You started disclaimer.
any opinions I express are mine and mine alone and do not represent any of the organizations that I represent or sit on the board for.
Okay. Now, of course, when you start out with something like that, you know there might be something to talk about, right? So, all right, Butch. So let's... So let's kind of the topic that we're talking about is associated to some changes, some lawsuits regarding brokers' commissions and stuff. Why don't you do this? Why don't you set the stage for us? I mean, we can assume that people kind of know, you know, that there's commissions exchanged, but they may not know the mechanics of how things have worked. Maybe a little bit of historical background on that.
Sure. Sure. History is interesting. The first multiple listing service was created back around 1912 when realtors agreed to cooperate with each other. And if they had a listing, offer a co-broke to somebody who brought the buyer. But at 1912, if you brought the buyer, you still represented the seller. And that was the case all the way up to the late 1980s. It wasn't until the late 80s and 90s buyers started to say, hey, wait, this isn't fair. You're driving me around. I'm telling you all my secrets, and you're telling my secrets to the seller. So in the late 80s, early 90s, all the states passed this buyer representative, buyer agency, where the agent could represent the buyer.
Right.
But the buyer's agent continued to get paid by the seller. Well, now flash forward another 45 years, and the seller's like, wait a second. If I put my house on the MLS, you're requiring me to put a co-broke in there for a buyer's agent, and I'm paying for someone to negotiate against me.
Yes.
So for a couple of things, the Justice Department never liked that because they thought sellers were forced to continue to pay the market value, market fee, because if they didn't, then realtors wouldn't show their houses. So they thought there was this conspiracy to keep prices high for sellers. And so the lawsuit basically tried to say, hey, you know, look, in this Missouri case that only affected, you know, 500 or 5,000 realtors, 80% of all your listings are offering the same amount. See, you've got a conspiracy to keep prices high.
Right. Okay. So just to back up, just for clarification, just to make sure everybody understands. So, you know, up to this point, or at least I guess since, you know, this recent way things have been done, there's typically been a commission that's collected by the broker on the seller side, right? And that has been paid always by the seller of the home. That commission ends up paying the buyer's broker or buyer's brokers as well. And the controversy is the seller saying, hey, why am I paying for somebody to represent someone who is not representing me, right?
Right.
Okay. So
that was one argument. That's
okay.
One argument. The other argument is the Department of Justice says if you don't offer what everybody else is offering, realtors won't show your property, which is against our code of ethics, but somewhat true. And so sellers continued to be forced to pay what all the other sellers were paying, keeping that price high.
Right, right. Okay, so the lawsuit itself, describe the lawsuit, specific lawsuit. Yes, sir.
The first lawsuit that went to court was the Sitzer lawsuit down in Missouri, again, claiming that realtors conspired to keep prices high for both buyers and sellers. And NAR lost that lawsuit, and the judgment against them was $1.8 billion of damages, which, because it was a class action lawsuit, gets trebled, so it's a lot of money. And so it's been a few weeks. That was October 31st. That verdict came down. Later that day, two other lawsuits, copycat lawsuits, got filed. Over the course of the next few months, we've seen about 20, 25 copycat lawsuits all over the country. Same exact arguments. And so NAR entered into a settlement agreement with the attorneys that's supposed to represent them against all claims from any seller across the country. And in the settlement, they said that we're not claiming any wrongdoing. We've done nothing wrong, but we're going to change the way we do business.
Okay.
We're not going to let realtors advertise a commission to the buyer's agent. And so sellers can still offer it. You just can't advertise it on the multiple listing service.
Huh. So practically speaking, how does that change anything?
It doesn't necessarily have to. See, a lot of the news media is saying, oh, it's going to save tons of money for buyers and sellers. But if you're a seller trying to sell your house, buyers, and think first-time buyers, your average buyer, saves up enough money for a down payment. Then they've got to pay for closing costs. Some states, they have to pay for lawyers to participate. Then they might have some states, there's taxes to pay on the transaction. Now you're going to ask buyers to pay for their own representation. So sellers can still offer that money to make it affordable for, right? Sellers offer concessions to buyers all the time. But it's now going to become a negotiable fee. The buyer's agent is going to have to negotiate with their buyer to ensure they're going to get paid. And that buyer can then negotiate with the seller to help pay for that. Or the buyer's agent can negotiate with the listing agent. Hmm. So it's just moving things around a little bit, making things more transparent for consumers.
Okay, so I know in my area here, I guess sort of the standard commission is 5%, okay? And so
I have to say there is no standard commission. Standard commissions are negotiated between buyer and seller. But yeah, if you look at the overall
it's 5%. There's no standard,
but that's not anywhere in writing, and there's no agreement
right
for people to charge that. Just happens to be what some agents charge more. You know, if you can explain your value to a client, why you're worth more, you can get more.
Okay.
If you're an agent that has lack of confidence in what you do, you often will negotiate and take less. So there is no set fee.
Okay.
You know, just I have to point.
No, I get it. I get it. So, but that's been sort of the tradition around here. And a lot of these houses that are being sold are,
where are you?
I'm in Montecito, California. So a lot of these houses are being sold for $30, $40 million with a 5% commission. And so that's a lot of money. So in the situation here, let's start with, somebody's got a house for sale and it's a $10 million house. They're putting it on now the MLS. Before, it would say something like 5% commission split, with buyers.
It would have the amount of money that the listing agent is offering to a buyer's agent.
Okay.
So it would be less than maybe half, maybe, 40%.
Right.
Whatever the agreement.
Okay.
With the client.
Right. And now they can't put that in there.
Correct.
Is anything in there right now? Is anything on the MLS now? Like, they're not allowed to put any of that numbers.
You can. That won't be implemented until July.
Okay.
So agents can still list the buyer agent commission.
But once July comes, it's off the table. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now the offer. So again, I'm just trying to practically figure out how this changes things, right? So now a buyer comes in and says, I'll pay. I'll do $10 million. Now, in the past, of course, now you didn't really, that one of the negotiating things really wasn't broker cost. How does the broker cost work now? So then the broker has to say, you can have this for $10 million, but we're not paying whatever your buyer broker wants to charge you. Right?
It becomes we negotiate so many things in a transaction. Right? Mm-hmm. The price, closing costs, date of closing, repairs, fixtures, it's all these things. This is going to be one more thing to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
And from a buyer's perspective or a buyer's agent's perspective, you're going to have to negotiate with your buyer. Hey, if I'm going to represent you, these are all the things I'm going to do for you. This is how much I'm going to get paid. And you're going to guarantee I get paid that. Mm-hmm. Now we can go ask the seller to cover it, but if they don't, you're on the hook. And the important thing to remember is buyers, the Wall Street Journal says realtors should go away. You can buy travel, you can buy vacations online. You should be able to buy a house online too. Yeah, but buying a house is not quite the same thing as buying an airline ticket and all the legal issues that come up. So the training that we have as realtors to protect our clients, to keep them away from risk in the process of buying a house, there's value to that.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere that money, right now that money's been coming from the seller forever, for the most part, not always, but for the most part. And that may not change, but it might. And we get to see from the going back to the lawsuit, the argument the sellers say have to pay this, there's another lawsuit going on that is not part of the settlement where buyers are saying, you told me, Mr. Realtor, that you didn't, I didn't owe you any money, but you got paid on my behalf and I didn't get to negotiate my fee with you. So your fee. So that's not fair. So we may see more things changing, but ultimately buyers who want representation, and they should, might have to pay for it. And smart sellers know that if you want to compete for buyers, right now, it's not a crazy market right now. It's not easy to sell a house. They might have to offer something. They just can't offer it on the MLS.
Got it. Do you anticipate, you know, in terms of buyers, brokers, the engagement that how they engage with buyers to change? Because right now, I mean, I know you could have a buyer agent, you know, have the buyer sign documents of, you know, of sort of be.
Yeah, 12 or 13 states require buyers to have that signed prior to working with a buyer.
Saying that they are exclusive or whatnot. How does that?
Basically saying that you're hiring me to work for you to represent you, and this is my fee for representation.
Got it.
So 13 states have required for a while.
Got it.
The way the industry works, and as somebody who trains and teaches realtors, it always drives me crazy. You get a phone call. Hey, I got referred to you by so-and-so. You're my realtor. I want to work with you. Here's three houses I want to go look at. Can you take me and show me these houses? Mm-hmm. I don't know you. You don't know me. I'm not a chauffeur. I'm not a tour guide. I am a real estate professional. I am a professional realtor. So for me, and I learned this very early in my career, it's like, I don't just hop in the car and show houses. Let's go meet, talk about what you're trying to accomplish, see if you want to work with me, and I'll see if I want to work with you. And then we make an agreement to work together.
Yeah.
So many agents just hop in the car and go show houses.
Yeah.
And they get bitter when the buyer calls them weeks later and says, hey, we bought a house. You should be happy. We found the house we love. So you did a lot of realtors do a lot of work for free. This will raise the level of professionalism in real estate because realtors are going to have to justify the work they do and negotiate to get paid for the work they do.
Yeah. And in some cases they would still show a house at least to sort of show what they can do or something like that. And as part of the selling themselves on the process.
Part of this agreement now is that realtors will not be able to show houses without having an agreement. Now you could have a 1-day agreement. Sign this for today. If I show you these houses, you buy this, I'm going to represent you on that.
Okay. And so those 1-day agreements are going to be critical because especially I just think about, you know, people walking by at your local, you know, brokerage, you know, who are in town here and want to see houses. And, you know, there's literally realtors just sitting there waiting if people want to go see houses.
In my mind, those are tour guides and chauffeurs, and they're not acting as a professional realtor because they haven't built a relationship, developed that connection to say, this is what I can do for you.
But now they're going to, in order to show a house, they're going to have to sign the document for a day or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you can't explain to a buyer why they should sign, you won't be in business very long.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if they want someone to show them a house, they're going to have to because no one else will be able to.
Right.
Right.
Well, non-realtors will be able to show them. See, you can be a licensed real estate agent and not be a realtor. A realtor is a member of the National Association of Realtors, agrees to abide by the Code of Ethics. And majority of licensed agents that sell residential property are realtors, but not all of them.
Okay.
And we see people, you know, leaving the association, so they don't want to follow the association rules.
Okay, so that could be potentially a very large change. Because, you know, then you can just do business as usual if you're not part of the National Association of Realtors. Yeah. Now, wasn't there something with regard to, don't you have to be part of the National Association of Realtors to, you know, to get access to the MLS and things like that, though?
It depends. There are some states like Denver, Colorado, for example, their MLS is public. It's not owned by the association. So any licensed agent can join. And their membership in the association is probably about 40%, 50% of the agents in Denver join the association. Because if your broker belongs, you have to belong. But where I am in Phoenix, our association is owned by the three local realtor associations. So we do allow non-members to join, but there's very few of them. There's very few of them. In the state of Arizona, where I am, almost all the MLSs are owned by, all the MLSs are owned by associations. So you, some of them allow non-members to join, but financially it's not worth it to just go join the MLS, go join the association.
Right.
That will change. This is one of those things that we don't know how this is going to play out over time. I have my thoughts on it, but, you know, in places where it's hard to do business, there's one big company out there a couple of years ago, public company, not Zillow, that has come out and said, we want to be a national MLS. Mm-hmm. But if they're not a member of the association, they can come out to realtors and say, put your houses here, offer your compensation here. We won't charge you anything. You know, we'll make money on the advertising.
Right.
Realtors, you know, and realtors could be the MLS and still have a way to market and promote their house.
Right.
So.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the implications of this. So what impact do you think this will have on real estate prices, if any?
I suspect they will come down a little bit. The issue is how much and where, right? There's a value to representation. And for years, that buyer's fee got buried in everything. Now it's out in the forefront. So transparency will help, but I think we're going to see people. There's always, look, in any market, I'm sure in your market as well, there's low-cost brokers. Hire us, it's going to cost you $500, $900, whatever. And we'll give you money back if we make more. But they never have a large market share because people understand the value of a real estate agent. Uh-huh. So I think we'll see more negotiation on those fees, which anytime there's competition and negotiation, we typically see those prices go down. But we'll see. We'll see what the impact is.
I'm curious about the price change concept because, I mean, in theory, it really shouldn't change much for the seller. Because either way they're going to be maybe they're only paying 2.5%, but if the in my case, in our case here, with 5% being sort of a typical thing, but if they're covering the buyer, you know, just for semantics, basically just to for the legal coverage of this whole thing, they're saying, hey, I'll cover your 2.5%. They're still paying the same thing. So how would that affect
that? Won't change.
So why would the price of houses, you think, come down?
Well, they wouldn't. The price of houses won't come down.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, an appraiser goes out to appraise a house.
Yeah.
And they look at what's the house worth on the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
For years, the cost of real estate representation was in the cost of that house.
Right.
Now we pull that out. Is the house going to still appraise for the same thing? Will it appraise for less? You can't get a bank. You can't roll your mortgage into your bank loan if you're a buyer.
Right.
So is it going to, we don't know. Is it going to affect appraisals or not?
I see.
But some sellers are going to say, look, if I don't have to offer a buyer agent commission, I'm not going to.
Right.
Let the buyer figure it out themselves.
Right.
And that alone saves the seller money. And the buyer's going to have to figure out, do they want to pay for it? They want to negotiate that as part of the contract. Again, it's going to change how we do business. Just nobody knows how it's going to land yet.
Yeah, interesting.
There's 1.5 million realtors in the country, and there's probably, and I shouldn't say this, but there's probably 20-30% that are really good at what they do, and they'll get through this without much change. It's the other chunk of realtors, part-timers, the newbies that are trying really hard that will really struggle because how are you worth what you're asking for? How are you worth that amount of money?
Yeah,
and that will cause we'll see that cause buyer commissions go down. I want to use a quick analogy. I mean, same thing. If you were to hire an attorney, you could go to the strip mall and hire Saul to represent you, or you can go to the high rise in the middle of town and pick the lawyer that's in the penthouse with a beautiful office. You're going to pay a whole lot of difference, a lot of difference in how much you're going to pay, and the quality of representation you're going to get is going to change. And we'll see that roll into real estate. Yeah.
Although the example of Better Call Saul, I don't know if that was a good one because he was pretty good at what he did. So,
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, so does this only cover residential, just individual home transactions?
Yes.
Okay, got it. So it's not going to really change anything.
The commercial market, same thing. They wouldn't be able to advertise their commissions, but In most commercial transactions, they are negotiated as part of the transaction. There's very few standard contracts for commercial, so this won't have a huge effect on the commercial business.
Right. When you think about, you mentioned earlier, you said you have some ideas on how this might all play out. How do you think it's all going to play out?
I think there's going to be a lot of trial and error. I think professionals, realtors that can speak to their value aren't going to see much change in their income. I mean, we have seen changes to our income. That 5% you talked about in your area was probably 6% 3 or 4 years ago. But as prices have skyrocketed since 2020, realtor fees have come down because as a percentage, it's a lot of money. I think we'll continue to see that number drop over time. But again, if you can speak to the value you bring to your client, you could get more money. You could get people asking for more. Because again, do you want, if you needed a pair of socks, you can go to Walmart and pay 69 cents. Or you can go to Neiman Marcus and pay $1,500. Same thing with the realtor. Do you want good representation and quality service? Or do you want just another agent representing you?
So what opportunities do you think, just in terms of, you know, the changing landscape here, do you see any sort of opportunities coming out of here in the real estate sector that are coming from because of this lawsuit? And maybe opportunities is the wrong word, because they could be things that, you know, you don't want to see happen, but are going, that may happen.
Opportunities for who? I think you'll see more negotiation on realtor fees, which is a good thing, right? More transparency, which is always a good thing.
What about business models that could come in and disrupt things?
For sure. I mean, for sure. Look, Zillow came in, whatever they started business out, trying to put realtors out of business. They said they weren't trying to, but more people use realtors for a transaction today than they did when Zillow went into business. Their added transparency made consumers aware that, oh, I really do need someone to help me with this process.
Right.
We don't know how it's going to play out. I think a realtor that is good at what they do, they can explain a contract, understands the contract, understands risk management for their client. You may see those, and I hate to call them bottom feeders, the low cost. You always, in life, you get what you pay for. So when we start seeing lawsuits from buyers who got bad representation or no representation, pendulum swings one way, it always comes back the other way.
What happens?
This is a great opportunity.
One thing I can foresee in this situation, and tell me if I'm thinking about this the right way, but you may have plenty of buyers that say, you know what, I don't need, I mean, whether they do or not, they may say, I don't need a buyer's agent. Right. This is not something that's necessary for me. So I'm just going to go in here and look at these properties on my own. As long as the seller will show it to me, and they don't need to represent.
Then let me ask you a question. It's one thing to look at houses.
Yeah. But
when you write that contract, in Arizona, our contract is 10 pages long. There's a list of required disclosures that buyers and sellers have to make to each other. Are you aware of what disclosures you should be getting from the seller and how to read those and understand those and how it impacts you? When you get the title commitment from the title company to see if they'll be able to provide you clear title, or there's clouds on the title, or things the seller has to pay off, who's going to advise you on how to handle that? And then let's negotiate repairs.
Yeah.
Right? Buyers do inspections, come up with a whole list of things they want the seller to fix. Gets very emotional. Who's going to handle that emotion? Who's going to help you negotiate and keep emotion out of it? Because it is a business transaction.
Yeah.
So buyers will think, I can go online and buy a plane ticket and book my own vacation. But man, isn't it better to have somebody point out, don't go there, go here. That's a better hotel.
So anyway, I guess I'm not arguing that the value of a buyer's agent, that, and I'm really more looking at sort of what some of the fallout and implications of this are. Certainly you're going to have buyers go in there and say, hey, I think I could do this for, there are these new templates now. I'm going to go look at that. I'm going to be checking off things and doing things, and that's going to save me thousands of dollars. So why wouldn't I do that?
Just one argument on that is, why don't more sellers do for sale by owner? Sell your house yourself. You don't need a realtor to sell your house.
Well, I think that's a little bit different, because I think there certainly is a marketing element to that, right?
There's marketing. Yeah, but there's also the legal protections, you know, in the process of the transaction, buying, showing houses is just one thing, but writing the contract, understanding what you're agreeing to in the contract, negotiating without getting emotionally involved, having somebody in between you and holding your hand. You know, part of my job is being a therapist and an advisor because people get so emotional in negotiating the sale and be keeping that one step difference. Getting a title commitment, looking at buyer disclosures, seller disclosures, making sure you're doing the proper forms that are required by law. Every state's different. Can a buyer do it themselves? Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't start to do my own taxes as a business owner, right? I certainly would hire an accountant because it's worth my money to protect my money. Yeah. And the same thing when it comes to buyers buying a house. You know, some will think I can do it myself. And others are like, no, I really do want that protection and representation.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. Do you think then that the total number of realtors is going to shrink because of this?
In my personal opinion, yes.
It's going to make it a lot harder. I mean, it seems like a lot of people who get into the business start as, you know, buyer's agents, right? Like they're trying to like accumulate clients. And if that becomes harder, then it becomes harder to get in.
The average age of a realtor is about 57 years old. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll see a lot of early retirements. I think we'll see a lot of people leaving the association over time. People are very angry with NAR right now, whether it's valid or not, they are. And it's going to be harder to be a buyer's agent. And, you know, it's been easy for people, and I don't like to trash my industry, but it's been easy for people to make a living who aren't very good at what they do. And I think those people will go away. We'll not be able to survive.
Sounds good. Well, Butch, I do appreciate this your time today. And this is, I think, is a very important update. I think, you know, this is typically an investing show. But on the other hand, you know, there are people who are doing single family homes that affects them on the investment side as well. And so there's going to be implications on this across the board. So and you said a lot of this stuff really doesn't this stuff will start in July for the most part.
Yeah, everything's supposed to be implemented in July.
Okay.
I'm betting it doesn't. It's such a major change that I don't think things are going to be in place to make it happen. But that's what NAR is saying, July implementation.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Butch, for being on Wealth Formula Podcast.
I appreciate it. Thanks for inviting me.
Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com.
Thanks so much.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that little update. And I think it's interesting. We'll see what happens. But if I'm a buyer, you know, if I feel like I'm pretty savvy in real estate and I don't have a license at this point, I don't know. It seems to me that I would probably want to just go in there and represent myself and, you know, just say the hell with it in terms of, you know, having to pay an additional cost to have a realtor. I mean, I get the argument there, but, you know, some of us do have a significant background in real estate transactions. And I do think there is going to be a meaningful change in how these, certainly from the buyer, buyer realtors, I think are going to really get hammered here. Anyway, that's all I have this week on Wealth Formula Podcast. One quick reminder that if you haven't signed up for our investor club and you are an accredited investor, you should definitely think about doing that sooner rather than later so that you can have some exposure to some deal flow. Again, that's it for me this week on Wealth Formula Podcast. This is Buck Joffrey signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Sapio with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.